Mickey Hart here, you're listening to GAA Hour Football Show.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
All right, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour brought to you by AIB. Brilliant show lined up today. We're talking to Dermot Connolly. I met Dermot on Monday at the launch of the Leinster football final. So there's about 25 minutes interview with him coming up today. We've Mark Shute on the line later. It's a very Dublin-centric show. You'll all be glad to hear. They obviously won the Leinster hurling final for the first time ever. He'll be joining on the line. With me in studio today is Mikey. Mikey, you're back.
Hey, how you doing?
Welcome back.
Thank you. Good to be back.
New little baby born. Congratulations.
In Dublin. It'll be a dub to go in with the theme of the show.
There you go. Yeah. A new baby girl.
How small can you buy Wexford jerseys?
You look very fresh, though, aren't you? Doesn't he, Shane? Yes, yeah. He looks fresh, considering you're not being kept up all night, no?
Not all night, but you know, if you're only sleeping for 5 hours, a 20-minute break in the middle to wake up and change a nappy, it'll take its toll on me eventually.
Well, here's something. You're working. You shouldn't have to be getting up in the middle of the night.
I feel I should contribute.
No, I have a baby on the way in March, in March, and
your girlfriend would be very interested in listening to this.
The deal I'm cutting is if I'm getting up for work, I'm not getting up in the middle of the night, because that's not fair.
I don't know.
Don't be walked all over, Mikey.
I'm not. No, I feel it's bonding time.
Well, that's true, yeah, okay. But it's the middle of the night, though.
If you really want to get to know someone, well, you need to change their nappy.
Well, that's true. I can't say I'm looking forward to the number twos. But anyways, listen, we'll move on before you all press stop there. Interprovincials, Mikey.
They're back, baby.
They're on this weekend. Nobody knows, really, because I actually didn't even know until today. Because nobody really cares, if I'm being 100% honest.
You only knew when I came in with my Railway Cup 2016 baseball cap on.
Exactly. You're absolutely delighted with this. But the football ones are on in Parnell Park. The hurling ones are on down in Nenagh, and in the finals in Thurles.
Mm-hmm.
There's no appetite for this. It's the end of the year. There might be.
There has been among players. It's like the international rules. It's liked by players, and sure, it doesn't do any harm, so let them off. But don't be grousing when people don't turn up to watch it, because the Railway Cup, that belongs to the time when people used to cycle the matches in black and white. People do not care about the Railway Cup.
No. And you know, it's unfortunate that there is an appetite out there for... Like, they could play on the Munster-Leinster rugby rivalry, for example. Do you know, like, if it was marketed properly and you got a player to maybe say, we're hoping to beat Munster, you know, and just play on a little bit of that rivalry, because that rivalry is there.
Mm.
But the GAA don't play on it at all. They keep this in the calendar just for the optics of it, because we want to save the tradition of it. But they actually don't try to make it good. Like, I mean, if the GAA, if the club season finishes in a year and they went to St. Patrick's Day and market them well, like, I'm sure I'd enjoy, like, I would enjoy them. I just don't enjoy them in their car. Like, they're just a token gesture at the end of the year.
They really are. And the fact that if you go on the four provincial websites, they're the only one that have their panels up are the Munster GAA website. The other three, you can't find the panels. You know, there's quotes from Pete McGrath spelling out who isn't in his panel, i.e. all the Ulster players you'd want to see,
all the
but you don't
Ulster
know
players.
Specifically who is on the panel, so it isn't marketed well. And I don't know, you always hear managers saying, well, hopefully people will come out and watch it, like Anthony Daly did, and then you hear players saying, oh geez, I love playing in it. Supposedly the Shot Neil guys are devastated they can't play for Ulster because they have to go over to London to play.
In my time, I've never played it, but I know the Ulster fellas are mad. They have serious passion for the province, as we know. And even Sigerson Cup up there is taken, like, they're just mad to win Sigerson. It's just, but yeah, you have Anthony Daly saying hopefully people will turn out. They won't
Some
turn out.
People.
They won't turn out, Anthony. They will not turn out. And even, like, you look at the Tipperary. Maybe it's because it's in Tipperary. You said Munster panel was released. Munster or Tipperary have a brilliant representation, like Pádraic Mars, there, Brendan Marr, Seamus Callanan, Noel McGrath, Bubbles Dwyer. All their big names are lining out for Munster. So people want to see games. I don't see why they wouldn't go to this. And you've got Munster versus Leinster in Croke Park on St. Patrick's Day, and play on the rugby rivalry. You know, like, you know what I mean? If you market these things, the people will come.
Would you go down the celebrity banished door route, have like Paul O'Connell on the Munster sideline, Sean O'Brien on the Leinster one?
Listen, if Sky got the rights to this, that's exactly what they would be doing.
Well, let's not open up that can of worms.
Maybe sell the rights to it to Sky, and let's see what they'll do with it. Tom Kniff, another quick talking point from today. He's regretting the decision to give poor Holmes and Connelly the bullet last year,
despite helping load the gun.
Despite voting in favour of them leaving. Now, I think you have to, in a situation like that, don't just go along with the crowd. If you think this is the wrong decision, stand up and be a man about it and voice your displeasure. And then a year later say, well, I didn't agree with it. They went, it was unfair. Don't vote them out and then start, you know, saying we made the wrong decision, because that story's done now. Why bring it all back up? And there have been new management. The new management arguably did better than that management. They got to an All-Ireland final, drew at Dublin. They had a really, really good year. Why are you dragging that up now? Especially when you voted for it the other way. Like, I mean, that story's done. And Martin Breton, he was only too delighted to hear those quotes in The Independent, because he's been waiting. I'd say Martin Breton was completely against the Galway and the Mayo panels. This is outrageous. Upstarts, brats, pups. They've no business doing this. Then the next minute, the two teams did really well under the two managements. Like, I mean, Galway should have nearly beaten Tipperary in that semi-final. They're a better team for a lot of it. Mayo should have beaten, could have beaten Dublin on both days. So Breheny's been very, very quiet. Like, he's been proven wrong that the players did the right thing. So now he's jumping on these quotes from Kniff, who hasn't been in the squad with the new Mayo management, has no idea what's going on in the new, you know, with the new setup, but is coming out with quotes about a decision he voted. Ah, look, this is just silly.
I think, in fairness to him, he originally voted for the two lads to go, and then I think he changed his mind when they had a second voter, however the whole process went. So he did change his mind, but he still originally was frustrated enough to vote against it. And like you said, if you have your frustrations, air them at the time, get them out there, because everybody went very quiet, you know, doing it from the comfort in New York. Now the safety of New York seems a little bit, I don't know, it's unhelpful. And I don't think Mayo just needed a couple of weeks out of the bloody headlines, to be honest.
Yeah,
with you.
It's very random, and you'd wonder where this interview opportunity came from at all, for him to be you know, talking like this from Mayo. But look, we're going to move on from that, because it's a very old story, you know. And Holmes and Connelly, two brilliant Mayo GA men, and the players made the decision that they did, and that's just it. Before we get to talk to Dermot Connolly, I want to talk to you quickly about secretary reports. And I wrote about this yesterday on Sports Show, and it's like silly season. I don't know why these secretary reports. Now, these secretary reports, certain parts make headlines. Mm. Now, you know, there might be some good content within the reports. I'm certainly not going to read a full report. That's not just not going to happen. But the headlines that they make, I don't know why so much kind of, you know, attention is given to them. They're the county secretary report. They've got a bias. They have a biased view on what happened.
Yeah.
Like, they're playing to the county convention gallery. You know, it's not going to be an objective viewpoint of something that happened during the year.
No, it's not. And having worked in newspapers for long enough, I know that you feel for a GA correspondent this time of year. There's no news. You know, most managerial appointments will be made. There's no matches. Panels aren't finalised. There's very little going on. So, you know, paper won't refuse ink. Something has to go in the GA pages, or half page or quarter page or column, as it becomes smaller and smaller in December. And that's where it comes from. These lads started realising, I'm actually, you know, I'm going to get some oxygen for my opinions here if I put this out in December, you know.
Yeah.
And it's become this mini industry. It's bizarre.
Yeah, every secretary, you know, from every county that there was a bit of controversy during the year, bang, where's his report? Here you go, here's your headlines, and that's it. Maybe that's the way it works. But, like, I mean, it is silly. You have, this week, the two examples I used, you have John Costello, the Dublin CEO, complaining about Dermot Connolly being targeted. Of course Dermot Connolly's targeted. That's been happening since bloody the GAA started. Your best players are going to get special treatment. And it would actually be an insulting to Dermot Connolly if a fella came over and didn't give him special treatment. Like, I mean, it just wouldn't happen. Johnny Cooper, Philly McMahon, they give their markers special treatment. Of course there's a line.
Unless they're marking you, as you revealed in your column.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I did reveal in my column. And this is the truth, because we're going to talk to Dermot Connolly very soon. But it's actually insulting if you're not target. Like, it's almost like a confidence booster. Dave, I remember in a Leinster final against Westmeath, John Keane walks over towards me, their best man marker, and I'm like, ah, right, okay, that's a nice one that they put him. It's terrible for me, but it's also a nice thing that they did put him on me and not Beano, for example. I played against Tyrone with Ryan McManaman. He was wing back and he never laid a hand on me. Now, my head was built up that this lad's going to torment me. He's going to do all sorts. And he never did a thing. And I was messing with my head. Does this fella not think I'm worth tormenting? And it was the same with Philly McMahon in Dublin Club Championship. Philly McMahon's one of the cleanest players I've ever marked. Marked me from behind, didn't pull my jersey, didn't touch me the whole way through the game. And it's again, what is this lad's problem? Hit me a punch there, Philly. Like, do something.
That's a stunning indictment, Willie.
It's a stunning indictment of my ability. Now, I was older when I marked Philly, but still, come on, Philly, just do something. But this is the thing, and the Mayo PRO, he talked about the disgraceful treatment that Lee Keegan received in the media and the build-up to the replay. Now, he has a bit of a point, you know? Like, I mean, there was a lot of Dublin ex-players coming out talking about something that they should know better than. Like, Lee Keegan, yeah, he checks Dear McConnelly's runs. Yeah, he annoys him, but that's it, that's the way the world works. That's the top level. Good man markers are not giving you a free run and goal. They're going to check your runs. But he completely forgets about David Brady, who's constantly throwing stuff out into the media. John Casey, the same. And you have Martin Carney, who's set out a rumour that Jim McGuinness is in working with the Mayo senior team. Like, you set that rumour out there. Immediately, Jim Gavin and Dublin are thinking, OK, Mayo's completely focus has completely changed. You're flying kites there. So don't think Mayo pundits don't influence the media as well.
And also, you're the Mayo PRO. You're the public relations officer. You're in charge of managing their public relations. A player of yours is blackguarded in the media. Terrible things are said about him. What should you do 3 months later? Dredge it all up again. Let's bring all this up again. How is that public relations management to bring all this up again? Even if you're coming out against it, what purpose does it serve to get that back in the headlines that Lee Keegan was being badmouthed in the media?
Yeah, it just keeps it there. Like, it doesn't make any sense. But look, these fellas do the reports, and it's actually not just county. I always thought it was county secretaries that wrote the reports, but it's not necessarily. It's whoever's nominated on the county board to write it, because he's a PRO, and John Costello's obviously
the Mayo secretary had a report as well.
Okay.
Yeah, there's
nothing juicy inside there at all, obviously.
I don't think so. The North Tipperary secretary, Marion Minahan, the headline from her report was that she was lucky to survive her first year in charge.
Right. Tell me more. I hope you have more.
I'm afraid I don't. I just took the headline.
And maybe your house was robbed or something.
fixture congestion got out of hand. Cars burned out, etc. Last year, Kilkenny secretary blamed the likes of Kilkenny CBS and St Kieran's for the slow development of 14-year-olds in the county. Because Kilkenny have terrible problems with the development
very
of young
poor learners. Underage structure, yeah. Very poor underage structure. So very poor schools teams.
Watch this space. Not this space, because we won't give them any oxygen, but watch GA Media in general. There will be more of these in the next couple of weeks.
And then, of course, we'll be hypocrites and comment on their comments. So, look, I mean, that's the way the world works.
As long as we're open about our hypocrisy,
we'll be sarcastic about it, though. That's the main thing. Right, listen, like I said earlier on, I caught up with Dear McConnelly on Monday. He was at the launch of the AIB Leinster football final, obviously at the weekend between Road and Vincent's, and we'll talk about that later on. And here's how it went. Dermot, great to finally get to interview you. Sightings of you is a bit like the Loch Ness Monster doing media events.
Oh, really, yeah? Why is it great?
Well, we never get to talk to you. We never really, you know, you don't do much interviews. Like, why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I haven't been asked to do a whole pile of them.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever rang me?
I was expecting, because you never see quotes from me, you know, that was something that you shied away from, but it's not. It's just you're not getting...
I said,
maybe.
I said to the guys inside, look, I'm representing Vincent here today as captain, Yeah, it's not something that I actively go and seek, is media attention and stuff like that, but it's not something I shy away from either.
Yeah, okay, that's interesting. Maybe Shep is just keeping people
maybe,
far away from
maybe.
Because you are the story of a lot of summers now, you know, the whole talk this summer was you getting targeted and the whole Lee Keegan thing, which is blowing up. What's your take on all that? Like, how bad is this targeting? Or is this something that's just on the outside and it doesn't really... interest you too much?
I think you guys do make a lot of this targeting thing, but it's in my opinion it's not I don't think it's a blight on the game or anything like that. All you're trying to do is go out and do the best you can for your team, and that's what Lee Keegan does. I think he said it in a couple of interviews himself,
yeah,
that, you know, he's not gonna just he's not going to sit back and let me kick 3 or 4 points just because the Dublin fans aren't going to be happy with that, or I'm not going to be happy with that. And similar, I'm not going to let him do the same. So, you know, it's like we go out and meet man mark people. Yeah, but
yeah, Philly and Johnny Cooper do the same thing.
Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. Every team does it. Like we do it for Vincent's as well. I mean, you've done it down the years with Port Leash and with Leash yourself. So, I mean, it's not. I don't think it's a big blight on the game, and I think it's kind of being blown out of all proportion, really. You know, it's all we're looking for is consistency from referees in letting the rules of the game or enforcing the rules of the game, and that's it. That's it.
Yeah, I think
as players now.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah, because the complaints don't come from inside the Dublin camp. They come from like ex Dublin players complaining about your treatment and stuff.
Absolutely, I don't control though.
Yeah,
it's out of your. I can't control what other people want to, you know, want to talk about in the media. You know, I could probably come out and give my own statement, which I am here today. But I mean, like ex players saying stuff in the media has no relevance to what I think about.
I think people lose sight of that.
And most of them things I don't even see or hear. So. Whatever, like,
It blew up probably this year because Tom Cribben is the first manager who actually came out and says, we're going for Connolly. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure that goes on inside dressing rooms, but he actually publicly said it. So that kind of shone a light on it a little bit, you know. And then Dolan came out and, you know, you were seen appealing to the linesman, whatever was going on off the ball, and you're not getting much protection. So then you do your usual move of getting them in a headlock and bringing them down to the ground and you both get yellow cards. Is that something? Because I've been a forward, Dermot, and I often went, right, I'm getting dogged here, I'm getting no help, I'm going to get us both in yellow cards. And then, you know, the onus is on him maybe to stop a little bit then.
Maybe you're a little bit smarter than me, Willie, but that never crossed my mind to get this guy in a yellow card or whatever.
Really?
No. Look, I just said it and kind of nipped this in the bud. I don't want to talk about this targeting thing. In my opinion, I don't think it's a big part of the game. But is all we're looking for is the consistency from the officials, and that's it. You know.
Do you think you get enough protection though? Because like I said, you were seen like looking at the linesman, and obviously they're all mic'd up. But you know, the message isn't going through of things that are going on off the ball. And do you think the forwards aren't getting the protection that they deserve?
No. I really don't know where this is all coming from. Like, you know, it's if a guy steps over and breaks the rules, and the officials don't
see it. Pulling and dragging, you know, that kind of way.
Well, yeah, the pulling and dragging. Some referees are really good at it, and then some referees turn a blind eye to some dragging and pulling inside. So, if there was consistency there, you know, well then there'd be no one giving out about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you see it. Maybe if you like the NFL. If it was flagged, if you got to throw on a flag and went back to a TMO and they reviewed it or something like this, you know, then that's probably at the elite level. You can't do that all the time, you know. So it's one of those things. I don't think it's a massive part of the game. I think it's been blown out of all proportion, really. This so-called targeting. I think it's more man marking.
Yeah, it's man marking. It's the buzzword of the summer, really. Yeah. Do you think maybe it's? I'll move off on this now. But do you think it's more prevalent with you because you have been known to react at times? You know, you've gotten a couple of red cards, and people think that this is something that could potentially get inside your head. Or is that something that you're working on? You know, not to react to things.
Yeah, I mean. There's only so much you can take as well.
Don't say that. That's not going to stop it.
No. You know what I mean.
I know.
I've learned to deal with it. Sometimes I reacted in a little bit more of a negative way when I was a little bit younger. But I've done a little bit of work on that with some people and it's just to stay in the moment rather than getting too carried away with what happened 5 minutes ago or what happened 10 minutes ago, kind of thing. You know, it's just gonna stay in focus and stay in the moment and try do the best you can be out there. You know, try to just be aware of the next player, the next ball, or the, you know, rather than thinking about the goal you missed or the guy that pulled you down or, you know, that sort of thing. It's just to focus on the moment rather than the past. You know?
Right, that's what you've learned from whoever you talk to, like, is in finding out the trigger points and when, you know. The reaction has come from is when you're frustrated, is it?
Yeah, you don't want to react to it, never. You want to respond and you want to have an answer for whatever happens in whatever situation it is, and be able to park it and then move to the next play or move to the next moment of the game. That's it.
Yeah. You're a real leader on the Dublin team now, Diarmaid. When did you start, you know, embracing that leadership role? Because I know when you started in 2007, you were a bit flighty, you were coming and going. When did you really settle down and feel...
I was also 18 years old.
Yeah, you were young. So. Ah, no, look, that's fair enough. Like, that's all in the context of it.
Yeah, I think that's just people, and that, you know, you get a little bit older, you get a little bit more mature, and you don't want to be, I don't know what flighty really means, but you don't want to be that guy that was...
on and off the team, whereas now, you know, you're...
Yeah, I got consistency in my game because I started to take it a little bit more serious and started working really hard on it. And then when you start doing that and you buy into the culture of a team, you start wanting other people to do the same thing. So, you know, you get more involved in it, and I suppose that's not only football, but that's life, really, isn't it? Like, yeah. you just grow up.
Was there a manager in particular that might have helped you along that way, like Pat Gilroy? Jim Gavin put an awful lot of trust in you when you came in, which probably helped.
Yeah, but I probably been one of the more established players in the team before Jim came in. Obviously, I had a relationship with Pat and Mickey through that Vincent's connection, and, you know, fairness to Pillar and Ski and Brian Talty and all them guys before that, they were really, really good to me as well. Dave Billings, God rest him. So, yeah, it's not just one manager or one person. It's kind of the whole kind of journey of it, you know.
Yeah.
We've met, obviously, a lot of good coaches down the years in the Dublin and Vincent setup. But I wouldn't single out one individual.
Right.
Again, that transition from being, as you say, flighty to being, as you say, a leader.
I got the impression you were hard to manage in your early years. Now, that's just from looking on the outside, you know, but maybe that's not the case. It's just from looking in, seeing he's on the he's clearly really, really good. He's on the team, he's off the team. You know, maybe just getting that consistency to your game. Or
again, I can't control what people think by looking in.
Yeah.
Anybody that knows me and anybody that's been around me knows that when I commit to something and I care about it, that I'll give my best to it. So by people looking in and making comment on something that they don't really know about, that used to annoy me a lot. But
right.
Now I just don't really care about it, to be honest with you, because
okay.
I can't control it.
And you read comments and stuff in the past, for you,
yeah.
You ignore it now?
Absolutely, yeah. But like, that's just, again, I think that's just a big part of growing up. It's about just not caring what other people think, really,
yeah.
You know? And sometimes that can take a while, you know? Especially people that you might have looked up to, or you might have seen, and they make a comment about you, and you're like a little bit harsh there. Like, you don't really know what's going on, and
yeah.
You know, it's really uneducated, and but it used to annoy me. It doesn't anymore.
Right. Do you think, just on that topic, like, I've heard enough about you to know that you're, you know, a good character in the dressing room, and there's a real light side to you. We don't really see that on the field. You're very serious the way you play the game. Do you think the fact that you don't do much media, that we don't really know you well enough, so people feel more entitled to make judgments on you?
Like, that's a sentence, isn't it? You're entitled to make judgment on me because you don't know me.
No, they feel like that. They don't get to know your personality
well
enough.
Would you like if someone done that, Woody, to you?
What
made mean? Comment on you, they didn't know you.
But they do it all the time.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
but like, is that fair?
No.
Is that what you're asking me?
No, it's absolutely not fair. I feel
isn't that not common sense then?
No, yeah. No, it's common sense. I'll talk from my point of view.
So you're entitled to make comment on me because you don't know.
No, I feel more comfortable, for example, as in you seem so distant away that, you know what I mean? If people knew you that bit better, they wouldn't feel it kind of as easy to say the things that they do. Does that make more sense?
Yeah, but I still don't agree with people making comment on people that they don't know because they see them on the telly, like, or something, you know.
Yeah, but that's the world. That's
yeah,
the way the world works.
But it's naive and ridiculous, really, isn't it? Huh?
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't think people know you well enough. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm trying to get you to do a bit more media. Oh, okay, you talked a bit earlier about the culture in the Dublin team now. You obviously came up into a culture, it wasn't a culture of winning, you know, and it kind of culminated in 2009 where you were hammered by Kerry when you're expected to win. Mm. And so you've seen Dublin grow from that kind of a team into, you know, the culture within the team now where it's just a winning culture. Everything's geared towards you winning. It must be a really nice place for you to be in, considering you've seen the other side of it.
Yeah, of course it is. As sports people, everyone just wants to go out and win, don't they? There's a brilliant culture around Dublin football at the moment, to be honest with you. All the all the younger guys coming through are really, really focused, and you just want to, like you've seen Colic and Andrew yesterday with his club and score 1-4, but not only score 1-4, like setting up goals and not being that selfish. And that's very mature for the young lad of his age, you know. I seen him speaking in Irish after the game, and you know, he spoke really, really well, and it wasn't about Colin O'Callaghan, it was about Cooley, you know, and that's,
yeah,
like that's not something you look in and take lightly, you know. These guys are coming in really, really focused, and trying to build the best they can for themselves, but also for the team, and that's all you want to ask for from a player, really. Isn't it?
Yeah, and that's the culture in the team now, and it might not have been in the past, that it is completely all about the team. It's not about it. You've obviously got brilliant individuals, but you're only part. Like, for example, you're like a Rolls Royce of a player, but you're back in your half-back line working. You know, it's not all about getting the best out of Dear McConnelly. It's what Dear McConnelly can do for the team.
Yeah, well, if you start being individualistic, you're not going to win at it. Look at Barcelona. I mean, look at Lionel Messi, the best footballer in the world. It doesn't mean he doesn't tackle. It doesn't mean he doesn't work back and work for his team. It doesn't mean that when he's on a hat-trick, he doesn't let Suarez take a penalty.
Yeah.
You know, and that's testament to him, and that's testament to how good Barcelona are. And that's, you know, I'm not comparing us to Barcelona, but what I'm saying is it's the culture, and it's not easy to get everyone to buy into that.
Yeah.
You know? But it's a very powerful thing when they do.
When did you eventually notice that we are on that kind of page?
Well, I mean, there was always, we were a little bit like, we could go out and we could play or we could perform in any given day, but we didn't have that consistency,
yeah.
You know, and that was the big part of it, I think. We just didn't have consistency, and I think when Pat came in and we were beaten in 2000, and after having a great Leinster campaign, beating in 2009 in the quarter final, you know, the media blew us up, and that was the big story. But within the camp, I don't think it was. I think we were disappointed. I think that year we lost the league final to Cork after being out of sight, and again kind of capitulated in the league final. And we went into the Kerry game thinking that we could win. You know, most games that Dublin go out and play, we think we can win, but we went out and we got absolutely annihilated. I think there was a startled earwigs comment after the game.
Yeah, Gilroy said that too.
Yeah, and Pat, to be fair, put in a plan for the next year. We might have been set up a little bit more defensively, but it got us over the line, and I think that's been the blueprint really for this Dublin team.
I've made comments before on the podcast that I hate seeing you doing this much, because you seem to be completely selfless regarding your own game, and because you can kick such brilliant scores, people kind of judge you on what you score, but there's so much more to your game, you know, under Jim Gavin than that. Like, I mean, that side of it, getting the balance between doing that kind of work and chasing the half back and actually having the energy to affect the game on the scoreboard must be a really difficult balance to get right.
Yeah, look, I mean, that's the wing forward position for Gaelic football at the moment. It used to be a little bit more natural, and you used to be kind of expected to do a lot of scoring, but now it's, you know, you want to be getting 10 to 12 tackles, you want to be options for kickouts, you want to be the link between transition to attack, from defence to attack, you want to be trying to get on the end of scores. It's all of those things. So, but like, I mean, an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you,
you're chasing Johnny Cooper back down there.
Exactly. You have to track your corner back who's trying to, or chasing a Philly McMahon who's trying to get up and get a score of his own, or
yeah.
Or, you know, shutting down short kickouts, or, you know, there's a defensive side to every position in the game, and there's also an attacking side. Like, and I mean, yeah, when you score 1-3 or 1-4, you're the best in the world, but what did your man do? What happened going back helping out your defence? What were you doing there? And I suppose everybody looks in and sees the guy who scores 1-4, 1-5. But are they working off the ball? Are they, you know, the analogy I just gave you with Lionel Messi there, he's scoring, you know, an average of a goal a game. But look at his tackles. I think when he came out to that Barcelona team first, he had the most tackles ever in La Liga. But he was doing it at the other end. And I always find that when you get the defensive side of your game right, everything else happens
going
the other way. So it's, you know, and it's that's the, I suppose, the benchmark, but that's the the building blocks of any good player, I think.
You seem to get a bit more freedom with Vincent's. Not saying you don't work with Vincent's, but you play centre half forward and you can get to hold that position that little bit more, you know, and you affect the scoreboard an awful lot more with them.
Yeah, I mean, I've played inside as well this year with Vincent's. It's kind of horse for courses, really, and we'll see, you know, we'll do our homework on road. We already have done a little bit, and we'll conclude that now tomorrow night, and then we'll come up with a plan then to try to counteract their strengths and weaknesses. And yeah, not that I get more freedom, I suppose when you're playing a centre forward role that you can hold that line a little bit more, and you don't have to, depending on what your opposite
and who
opponent
your
is, really,
yeah.
What he's going to do.
Because he went in there against Mayo, but Keegan obviously went in centre back, so he's going forward from that position.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's just being adaptable, and I suppose he's a massive strength for them going forward. Just like James McCarthy is, or John Small was for us this year, Keegan kind of sitting more of a holding role, really. Whatever. Like, I mean, it's horses for courses, isn't it?
Yeah. I saw some comments from Alan Brogan. He wrote in The Independent, and he says, everything just comes naturally to you. And I saw you responding to it saying, you know, I work harder than everybody else. And I wouldn't say Alan means that you don't work hard. He just means that, you know, you're gifted. What do you work hardest on? Because you are very naturally talented.
Yeah, I don't think you work... I wouldn't single out one... At the moment, I wouldn't single out one thing that I'm working really hard on. Trying to relax a little bit more, maybe. And stop thinking about fucking Gaelic football.
But, do you overthink stuff, or...?
No, I don't overthink stuff, but... I think I've been very lucky without getting injured too often. I think that's a big factor of it, and I suppose when you're playing and you're training all the time, you're learning all the time, you know that way. When you're crocked or you're off your feet for a couple of months, then things start to get a little bit stale and stuff like that. So I've kind of just been lucky with the flow I've got, kind of, and I've been with successful teams and stuff. So I kind of find, like, tactics wise and all that sort of stuff, that kind of comes easy to me. So I don't know, like, I wouldn't say one major thing. I always work really hard on kicking off both feet and my kick passing and obviously score getting and stuff like that. But I don't think it's one thing. It's a load of things, really. Like,
yeah. Did you have to work hard on your left, or were you naturally two-footed?
No one's naturally two-footed. I just developed that kind of at a younger age and kept it going. You know, I was always able to kick off my left and right. But I don't know. Was it probably Tony Diamond or one of them? Probably Tony Diamond was a big fan of two-footed players, and he was always kind of drilling that into us. We had a successful team underage at Vincent's. He used to call, what was it? You're good foot and you're better foot, not your weak foot and your good foot. You
so
know,
you're just so. Lucky with good coaching, younger. Like, every young fella should be kick with both feet if you're in the forwards. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, good coaches.
A lot of them actually aren't at senior inter-county level, which is mad.
You'll find that most of them are. I heard Mossy make a comment on Kevin McMenamin, and he's one guy that he was struggling to get into the team because he didn't have that in his game, and now most of his scores are coming off his good foot, not his better one.
One against Kerry was a tasty one. Off
exactly,
one.
Yeah, and that's testament to guys like that who've put in massive, massive work to kind of, not plug holes in their game, but try to make their game a little bit stronger, you know. And that's testament to the culture as well, and in the group.
Yeah. What motivates you in Dublin? Like, I mean, because you've won so much now, you've 4 All-Irelands in 6 years. Is it the fear of losing your place in the team? You know, what's driving you every year to...
It's not going to last forever.
Yeah.
It's not going to last forever. Make hay when the sun shines.
Is there a sense
that's
there?
That's absolutely it. Yeah. Like, some of these guys have came in, the likes of Brian Fenton and stuff, and like dream stuff, never lost a game for Dublin, which is crazy, like, to think about. Like, he's never ever lost a game for Dublin, and please God, he'll be around for a long time to come, but it won't last forever. And you can ask ex-players that, you can ask you know that yourself, Willie.
Yeah, mine never started at all.
Yeah, well, that's neither here nor there. But, that's what motivates me. Anyway, I mean, I'm just trying to make the best of what's there at the moment.
Yeah.
And if I can add something for one more year, brilliant. If I can add something for 2 more years, even better. And
yeah.
you know, we'll take it from there.
Is that difficult? And just, we touched on this earlier on, yourself and Bernard Brogan and these lads have seen the bad times, so you're appreciating it won't last forever. And then you have Kieran Kilkenny's, the Jack McCaffrey's, the Fentons, who are coming up into an All-Ireland winning team their first year and have never really had that heartbreak. Do you have to remind these young lads, or the level-headed fellas, you know, that this is as good as it gets and don't take it for granted?
No, I think this Dublin side are very mature. Even this, like I was talking with Con earlier on, even the younger guys in the team coming in there, they realise, and it's not often it's not often you get a player to come straight into the Dublin team either. They'll have to do their, you know, they'll have to do their work, and if they're shown well in training and they're doing their things, they'll get their chance. But there's a lot of talent there, but talent doesn't mean you can win everything, you know. It's about people doing it for each other and buying into the culture and the ethos in the group. So that's a massive part of it. And we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and play for myself, and you know,
that's harsh now.
Yeah, well, it's true. I'm only messing.
You're doing to me messing. What you're giving out back there.
I don't like people making judgment on you now, do you? No, all right, fair. But yeah, if you don't buy into the culture in the group and you want to be, for want of a better word, Billy Big Balls,
yeah,
you won't be on a winning team, and that's a major thing for me anyway.
Yeah, do us a favour, because we're nearly out of time, is the black card with Lee Keegan in the All-Ireland final, because we had a huge argument about this on the podcast, and my opinion was that you sewed Lee Keegan up good and proper, that you went to ground and you showed the card to the referee and you wanted him to get a black card. Selling Connell, and Conan said that you were pulled back, you know, so there's two sides to it. What was your reading of it?
What was my reading of it? Was, yeah, it black card?
I think 100%. But I thought he pulled you back rather than down. I thought you went down maybe just to make sure it was the black card. Is that fair enough?
Well, give us the ruling on the black card.
You have to be pulled down.
A deliberate pull down.
Pull down.
Was,
yeah,
it a deliberate pull down?
I thought he pulled you, but not necessarily. I thought you might have gone down.
Did he deliberately pull me? He
tried to get in front of you towards the ball. I thought two of you tried to get towards the ball.
Look, anyway, as I said earlier on, these things are at the referee's discretion. And it's all we're looking for is consistency there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So.
And are you pro the black card, or do you think the punishment is a little bit harsh?
I don't like the black card at all.
Right. You don't even like that cynical play should be punished as a forward?
No, I do. And I think we have cards for that. It's a yellow card.
Right.
If they were going to bring in a ruling, in my opinion, if they were going to bring in a ruling, if it was a clear goal scoring opportunity and someone gets pulled down to the ground or cynically pulled down to the ground, that is a red card. And okay, we don't have that in our game. Cynical foul,
like
out
professional
the field.
Foul.
Like, I mean, if you're clear cut on goal and someone takes you out of it, you know, we've got a card for that. In my opinion, it's a red card. If it's a cynical foul out the field, you've got two goals at that and it's a yellow.
Well, what if Dublin, like, I remember when Dublin were losing to Mayo in 2012 and, like, they were cynically pulling you down and you couldn't get any momentum to try and get, you know what I mean, get the game back. Do you think that's fair enough,
yeah,
to just be allowed to do that?
On the flip side of that, what happens when you're 3 minutes into an All-Ireland final and someone pulls you down and, you know, it's in the corner back position. So a corner forward pulls down a corner back. This is just per se.
Yeah.
And you miss out on the whole game for,
yeah,
that.
No, that's definitely, yeah, that's harsh. Okay, finally, Vincent's at the weekend against Road. How do you keep going year after year? Like, I mean, you've such long seasons with Dublin and then you come back. Is it hard to get back into club mode after winning All-Ireland? Or, like, does it take you a little while to go, right, there's closure on that, I've celebrated it for maybe a day, if you're lucky now, the way it's gone, and to actually get back onto the same level that your teammates at club level are?
Yeah, it is hard.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't love it. So it's been a very long season for me personally, but it's been a long season for all the lads in the club, to be honest with you, you know.
A lot of long seasons, because you've nearly four long seasons in a row now.
Last year we got a break. We were beaten in the county final at Ballyboden, and we got a break kind of most of November and December, and then I didn't come back till mid-Jan. We just wanted to take a bit of a break off, so I didn't play the O'Byrne Cup, and came back then for the league with Dublin. But yeah, I mean, most of the managers that I've been involved with have been very good in the sense that if you need a break and you say it to them, that they're very accommodating that way as well, you know. And I suppose you need to look after the longevity of players. If you're asked. you're asked to play all year round for 5 and 6 seasons without taking a break, without mentally being able to switch off, one, your body will probably break down, but two, you'll just get fed up with it and you won't want to play.
Mentally, and that's
not what you want. And in fairness, Jim has been very good with giving guys, like Ballyboden went on a run last year and he gave them guys time off when they came back, similar Ballymun done it the year before. We had a couple of runs and he's always been a big advocate of guys being able to switch off and then coming back fresh, you know, and yeah.
Yeah, well listen, thanks for this and best of luck with the weekend.
Thanks, mate.
I've had fellas follow me, and not just Cork lads, you know what I mean? It happens, yeah. And it does happen, yeah. But I'll tell you one thing, it's a lonely spot, and the best thing you can do is keep moving, and I thought Connolly looked to be trying to do that the last night.
The camera show didn't look great, there was, maybe if they could say it was theatrical or whatever, but like, the reality is that there was contact, and I wasn't trying to win a penalty, I was trying to go out and win the ball.
You know, actually, it's funny, your man Conan, what's his name on your programme, like, I was wondering if he had the same match as me. He was kind of making out terrible, but unlucky to lose. Like, let's go. 10% luck, 20% skill, 15% concentrated power of will, 5% pleasure, 50% pain, and 100% reason to remember the name.
AIB, back in club and county.
All right, delighted to say, fresh from winning the Leinster club title, hurling title for the first time ever for Coola, I'm delighted to say we've Mark Shute on the line. Mark, congratulations first of all.
Cheers, buddy.
How were the celebrations?
There was enough there Sunday and Monday, but people kind of got back to reality now the last couple of days, so kind of just probably settling in for most of us now.
Yeah, so the reality for you is exams, is that right?
I've an exam now tomorrow, today, and then there's another one tomorrow, so yeah, it's a bit of a hectic health schedule, so like, I got a bit of work done last week and I wasn't relying too much on doing a bit on study on Monday.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so. I want to take you back to losing to Oulart first, Mark, because, you know, I remember watching that game and I can imagine it was a very frustrating game for you to play in with your forward line that completely shut you down and you didn't perform well on the day. But I was reading comments from Matty who said you had a league final not long after that and you had a meeting after that and kind of parked that loss.
Yeah, I suppose we were, after losing last year's Leinster final, like, we were all devastated. Obviously, you know, we probably thought we didn't perform to what the capabilities that we had. And the week after, we were fortunate enough, we had a league final. Probably wasn't redemption, but it's just good to get off and blow off the cobwebs. Just a few lads, probably sore bodies, but we were gone out and it was probably the worst conditions I've ever played a hurling match in. But we just thought, said we'll set down a marker for the year ourselves that day, and we went out and beat O'Toole's in the league final and then sat down after and we really set out a goal to go back and try and get back into the Leinster Championship again. And like, we didn't look too much further than Dublin. Like, we had a few huge battles in Dublin, like only got over Bowden in extra time, and we were losing to Crokes by 2 in the final, so we probably came out through a few tough battles there, and then we knew we were in good stead coming into the Leinster Championship then.
Yeah, you played really well in the Leinster Championship. Was there a bit of a novelty about 2015, maybe some nerves before the final, that you had that bit of experience this year?
Yeah, no, I suppose last year, the way the games worked out, I think it was something like we had 6 games in 6 weeks or something coming up to the Leinster final. So we were just taking it all in our stride, and probably just win the Dublin Championship. It was just great to get that monkey off our back, and we probably just took every night stride, and we just took the Leinster Championship kind of, not so much as a bonus, but we were nearly just set out to start the year to win a Dublin Championship. I think this year we were fortunate that when we won the Dublin Championship, we had a 2-week break between every match, so we could really recover well from each game and then really look at the next opponent and prepare well for them.
Yeah, watching the game on Sunday, like you've a really, really good team, a really, really good forward line. Where has the team come from, Mark? Because I had a look back, like it's not like you've been dominating at underage level. You know, you won an under 21 in 2009, but it hasn't been cool to win in year after year that this team has just been, you know, ready to explode at senior level.
Yeah, I know. We've always had probably two or three good players coming through at minor level, and over the last number of years it's been building, and then probably 2012 was our first kind of breakthrough year. There was a lot of us, you know, we'd three minors who are Sean Brennan, Colin Cronin and Keane O'Callaghan, who are minors then, and we're probably building for the future. So we broke through then, and the team's kind of been building. Then we've had lads like Sean Tracy and Conor O'Callaghan who've just kind of joined the squad in the last couple of years. So it's probably adding one or two lads since then, and it's probably worked well for us.
Yeah, Conor Callaghan's made a huge impression in the forward line. You know, it gives you all that little bit of extra space when he's in there, because he's just dangerous. He wasn't really there last year, was injured and only got back for the Leinster final, probably wasn't 100%.
Yeah, and also he got back for the Leinster final last year, and probably he hadn't got much hurling done up until the Leinster final, so he probably hadn't much hurling done before the Leinster Championship this year, but he's been going well. So, yeah, no, he's been obviously a huge asset for us. Like, and obviously we're delighted to have him working the way he has, having his experience come back from an All-Ireland winning setup, and bringing his experience like that is brilliant for the setup.
Have you been on to him now in the pub on Sunday night, and you're having a few on Monday, to forget about sitting on the bench with the footballers and come with the hurlers all together?
I have been in his ear before, but look, he's a motivated individual, and he really wants to give the football a good go, and probably had a great year with the Dublin 21 footballers this year, and he'll be looking to push on with the seniors next year. So unfortunately for us, I don't think we'll be seeing him in a Dublin Hurling jersey next season anyway.
Yeah, it's unfortunate for everyone. You wouldn't mind if he was starting with the footballers. It must drive you mad though, Mark. Like, you're like a stalwart of the hurling team and you're losing a lot of fellas, and then you see Conn, you see Brady with the footballers not getting a look in. You know, Kieran Kilkenny, you understand that he's starting, winning All-Stars, but the fellas on the bench that aren't getting games when you'd absolutely love to have them.
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's everyone's decision, each their own, you know. I fully respect those lads. They are picking up all our medals, so like, it's probably up to us as a hurling squad to push on, and if we start competing at that level, then it will probably motivate younger, the lads coming out of minor, that if they have a hurling and football squad that are playing in All-Ireland finals every year, then they'd be more inclined to join the hurling panel.
Yeah, I suppose that's the way it works. Tell us about your favourites now to win the All-Ireland. You're 5-6 with St. Thomas's and Ballyhale at 11-4. So, you know, I saw Maddie saying that, you know, anything outside of a Leinster wouldn't be improvement on last year, which is fair enough. But, you know, it's All-Ireland's, I presume, now that the focus is on.
Yeah, so obviously, like, after the last couple of days, we've enjoyed that, and we've got an 8-week break now till the Sloughneil match. So we'll sit down now over the weekend and we'll probably lay out a plan for the next 7 weeks. There's three of the teams there that have never played in an All-Ireland semi-final, so like, Thomas's have had the experience of there, so it's probably a novelty for the three of us preparing for this stage of the competition, but it's one we'll look forward to anyway.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about Coola, Mark. You know, you're a dual club. You actually won an under 21 double in 2009. So you're trying to keep both sides of the club going. You know, is the town gone mad?
I suppose the town, it's probably tame enough down there. There's just a lot more going on in Dalkey than Ireland. So the tight-knit club, I suppose everyone in the media club were absolutely buzzing on Sunday night. You know, there's been so much hard work gone in over the years, like, probably just to name check lads like Dale Burns. Like, there was no kind of academy or anything in Coola about 20 years ago, and lads like Ushing Goff, Paul Shute and David, they probably would have been the first crop of lads to have gone through the Coola Academy under Dale Byrne. And like, I was down at the Coola Academy there a couple of weeks ago, and there's like 100 kids under 9 playing, and so like, there's huge numbers there now, and it's just so well organised from from the underage up all the way up to now Maddie running the senior hurling section. So like the club's really well structured at the minute, and we're probably getting the results first.
Yeah, because that Coola Academy, that was set up in the 90s, right? It was kind of, you'd lost kind of track of the youth set up when you were so successful towards the late 80s, 90s, and then you set up this academy, and that's, you know, what's been churning out the underage players.
Yeah, exactly. I thought there was probably about a 5-year gap where there was nothing being done underage, and like we just really weren't getting any players coming through at the adult level, so... The older lads in the club really went back and just started from scratch and set up the academy and got the numbers playing there, and probably would have been tough for them going out under 9s, under 10s when the senior team were struggling, but like days like Sunday were probably built from them lads doing that, and like for the players, we're just so grateful for what those people have put into the club.
Yeah, you even have your own ultras now as well.
The Hunters are brilliant. A few of the lads on the teams, younger brothers, there's a WhatsApp group, and they get buses down to their man side. They've some crack in fairness, and they're even down in the middle of Dalkey Town on Sunday night chanting. So
really,
they're bringing a great bit of. Sorry.
Yeah, they're all really young.
They'd all be around 15, 16, so it's great to see them getting involved as well, and probably getting as much enjoyment out of us as we are as players. Like, so, it is just such a, it's a whole club, the whole club have got rolled in behind us, so it's brilliant, really.
Yeah, it's the first GAA Ultras, I think, is it?
I know, yeah. They're doing alright for themselves anyway.
As long as they don't start organising rows with the Slot Nail Ultras before the All-Ireland semi-final, we'll be okay, we'll be alright. Listen, well, Mark, thanks very much for taking the call. Oh yeah, quickly, I want to ask you about Dublin, because you it's probably at the last thing you're thinking of at the moment, because you've enough on your plate. There's a lot of talk about whether it's a happy camp, whether it's not a happy camp. It looks to me like the fellas who are in on the panel say it's a happy camp, and some of the fellas who haven't made the team and they're gone off it is saying it's not a happy camp. It's not an ideal situation to have this kind of tug of war going on in the media.
Yeah, I know, it's a strange enough situation. I've been fortunate enough now with school, like we've probably been a bit detached from the whole thing the last couple of months, just focusing solely on Coola. But yeah, no, look, it's like we're amateur players at the end of the day. Some like I don't think there's ever been a squad where people aren't fully happy. Also, it's people's decision. If they don't want to play for Dublin, then that's their own decision. So like I'll respect that, and I'll. Like there'll be a few, they'll give the chance to a few young lads now coming up in the league. So I'll look forward to seeing that anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Listen. Well, best of luck against Slotnail. Enjoy the win and the Christmas. Thanks for taking the call.
Cheers, Colin. Talk to you.
Next up, we'll have a look at the weekend's club action.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're at home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the
yeah,
body.
Yeah, you have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
well,
at me.
Out of a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
This slot is slowing down, Mikey. It's losing pace, the look ahead to the weekend's club action. I remember a month ago this was fertile ground. There was fixtures coming out through our ears. We're left with two this weekend.
You're forgetting about six very important fixtures there in the Interprovincial Championships.
Yes, obviously. Well, we touched on them at the start of the show, so we're not going to go back over them. They're obviously hurling and football Interprovincials. Like we mentioned, one, the football's being held in Parnell Park on Saturday and Sunday, and the hurling's being held in Nina on Saturday and then in Semple Stadium on Sunday. So we'll see how those go. The big club action though is at the weekend, and this is on Sunday, both games on Sunday, and St Kieran's from Britain play Slotnail, and this is in an All-Ireland Club quarterfinals. Obviously one province has to play the winners in England, usually beat them handy enough after fulfilled the fixture, and then we're back to the four Irish provinces, back into the mix again. I was looking at the odds for that All-Ireland Club Hurling. Like, Coola are 5-6 favourites. Then we have Ballyea, and we have St. Thomas's, and they're 11-4, and then Slotnail are way out there at 25-1. You know, there's a part of that those long odds in that they have to play someone else, and then they have to play Coola, who are the favourites, so they're way out there. But you know, it definitely is a very interesting All-Ireland Club Hurling Championship.
100%, 100%. I think it's I think Coola being added in there, the first Dublin winner since what, 1980, you know.
Great to have a new name in there, isn't it? Ballyea is a new name. Coola, especially in Leinster with Coola, because Leinster was like, well, I suppose we had a couple of new Offaly champions, but to be fair, we haven't had anyone from Dublin in the mix there at all for a long time, and it is good to see a Dublin club. And you can play this back to me in 5 years when Coola win 5 in a row, and I'm whinging about the Dublin clubs winning it, but it's great to have them winning it for the first time.
Dublin hurling needed a bit of a boost as well. They've had a tough year, and they're, by all accounts, they're quite likely to have a tough 2017 in the intercounty area at least, so it's no harm for them to have this. And you know, it makes a change from it being an Offaly champion, or even Owlert, or you know, who are a traditional powerhouse the last 20 years. So it is nice that Coola, coming from the rich, fertile South Dublin hurling grounds, have risen, you know.
Yeah, and I think Dublin clubs had won their previous, or lost their previous 8 Leinster finals, and you know, to beat the Kilkenny champions, it's a huge achievement. Like, you know, it's psychologically, it's a huge achievement. It's like, move over Kilkenny, Ballyhale are on the way in a little bit. You know, this is Coola, young, exciting forward line, you know, and they're a team. And they've got ultras, Mikey. What more is there to like?
Ultras in Santa Hats. I don't know if I was talking to you about this. I was watching it for a little while on Sunday before my little one, you know, took my attention to whatever it was, probably a dirty nappy. But it's like watching a Leinster Senior Cup schools rugby match. You know, they've got their chants, they're wearing their Santa hats, they've got their face painted. Yeah. You know, the Dockey lads, they're bringing something new to Club Hurling.
It's great to see it, just a few flares now maybe and stuff like that. Like I was saying to Mark, they just have to organise a fight with the Slotnail Ultras before the game. And then
I would not mess with the Slotnail Ultras.
That's true, yeah. No, let's leave that off. But listen, maybe there's a hooligan future in the G. Maybe this is the start of something absolutely awful and we're laughing about it.
Dockey versus the Derry Mountain Men is not the way to start it.
You're going to be no one really, are they? Let's be honest. I don't want to stereotype. But the big one at the weekend is St. Vincent's and Road. You know, two teams I have a lot of experience playing against. Road, 100% credit to Road. They're still sticking in there. They've lost 4 since 2006. They're a tiny little village. We were there last night shooting a video. They have a tiny pick, 300 members. Like, for example, Coola has 1,600 members and they're a small club, you know, in Dublin. So this is what you're dealing with. To stay at that level in Leinster, they've won eight of the last 13 Offaly Championships. It's massive credit to them. They were around when I was, you know, in the Leinster Championship with Portlaoise. Portlaoise are probably still there, but for a small club like Road to still be challenging, you know, it's a credit to them. But like, let's be honest about this. They're, you know, they're way, way outsiders on Sunday, and especially without Anton O'Sullivan and Jake Kavanagh, who are away with the Army as well, which is a massive loss. Two regular starters for such a small club, and it's impossible to replace them.
Particularly Sullivan, who's an Offaly starter and a great presence in the middle of the field. But Roder, exactly, you were talking about it with John Fogarty last week, the idea of our dual counties on the wane. As long as you've got these little pockets of, you know, unexplainable excellence like Road in a county like Offaly, there's always hope for a dual county, because Road is not development plans and centres of excellence. As you said, it's a crossroads with a pub and a post office.
Yeah.
And it just happened to have some freakishly talented footballers. So it's great that they're there, but as you say, going up against the mighty Marino, they're probably having a prayer.
No, I don't think they have a prayer, because let's be honest, if Road shut Niall McNamee down, and it's not Niall McNamee has been on the go for so long now, and he's so important to Road. Like, you were telling me, 121 in the last 3 matches, but that's no surprise. Like, everything goes through him.
Yeah.
So when you shut him down, it's hard to know, which Vincent's, you know, most likely will. To be fair to Niall McNamee, he's double marked a lot. He'd still chip in for 2 or 3, but for Road to beat Vincent's at the weekend, you'll need nearly 2-4 from Niall McNamee. Kind of, and like that's the reality of it. Vincent's are such a powerhouse. They've such a good team. You know, even losing Eamon Fennell hasn't really affected him. They've just put Shane Carty in midfield and he's breaking forward, and you know, they still have fellas that can come in. And like, let's be honest about it, Enda Varley's come into their forward line, who they didn't have last year. So losing Eamon Fennell, they just move Carty back into midfield from the forwards, and then the Varley to come in and replace him. And it's just so hard to beat the likes of Vincent's.
Yeah, you mentioned Varley and Quinn and of course Dermot Connolly, but then you look at the semi-final against Mullinocta and it was Shane Carty coming from deeper, whether he was a third midfielder or a centre-half forward.
I think him and Dermot Connolly were actually alternating between centre-half forward.
He scored 1-3.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and if Gavin Burke as well on the wing, who's an outstanding player, and they just can hurt you. And Mossy, when he doesn't get out in front of his man that much anymore, but like you have a move ending with Mossy Quinn, and it's either going over the bar or it's going in the back of the net. He's as good a finisher in the game. So, you know, when he's, I think Varley is such a brilliant foil for Mossy. Like, Varley's movement is great, he's strong, he's young, he's fast. Mossy will say, here, make my runs for me, mate, you know, and you have Trainer as well in the other corner, and he's lively in movement, so Mossy just doesn't really need those legs anymore.
He doesn't, and it's a shame. It seems the Leinster Club Championship is going the same way as the Leinster Intercounty Championship. You know, it's just, you look at the champ, like the Wexford champions, for example, got beaten senseless by Road. You know, Road have like really come through strong, but you're looking for the champions of Kildare, the champions of Meath, to make an impact, and they're just not, you know. They're just, whether they're first time winners who've over celebrated, or, you know, at Simmons Town or whatever. But they're just not making a mark. The Dublin clubs are sauntering through it for the most part.
They are sauntering through it. Portlaoise are the only club have put up any opposition. And to be fair, Portlaoise have been very unlucky. A game I played, we lost against St. Bridges after extra time. Really should have beaten them that day. And since then, since I stopped playing, they've lost 3 Leinster finals, to 1 to Ballymunkickhams and 2 to Vincent's. And the 2 they lost, or no, 1 to Vincent's and 1 to Ballyboden St. Enda's. And the 1 to Vincent's and Ballyboden, that could have gone either way. Mm. So maybe that kind of paints the picture of how unfair it is when Portlaoise have all Portlaoise players, and these lads have, you know, you've players making an impact that are not from Vincent's, and, you know, genuinely. But you're right. Mead champions gone back terribly, Kildare champions gone back terribly, and Portlaoise saunter through Leinster usually as well when they get out, and it's only the Dublin teams they can't beat. So it's been only Portlaoise putting it up to them, and Portlaoise won't be there forever. Mm-hmm. And the domination from Dublin clubs of Leinster, it'll go on. We're looking at for the next 10 years here, because Dublin clubs are just so strong.
That's not to write off Road. Here's hoping they shock us, but I don't have the odds in front of me, but I'd say they're forbidding. Now, to be honest with you, I can't imagine Vincent's or anything but very, very, very firm favourites.
Yeah, no, they are. And just to mention about Road as well, Pascal Keelahan is their manager. He's their manager this year. He obviously did a great job with Monster Evan. He did a good job with another club in Offaly, whose name escapes me. And he managed a tie as well. And he kind of left them a bit prematurely. But he's a really, really good, highly rated young manager, and apparently has been playing really good football, and changes their tactics depending on who they play. And I'm sure it won't be from want of effort from him, tactics from him, effort from their old players. I just think this is like Laois playing Dublin at senior intercounty level. You just can't see Dublin team being beaten.
Vincent's have been they've been making a habit. I was at the game against Ballymun, where they, you know, the semi final. They weren't brilliant. They were grand. They did enough to win it, and it seems every round since then they've done the same thing. They haven't blown anyone away, but they haven't necessarily looked like losing a match either, which is kind of forbidding, isn't it? You know, that's a sign of a really good team when everybody watching says they've got something left, but they're not even stretching themselves. They're that confident they're going to win. They're kind of seem to be playing within themselves.
Yeah, I think you'd agree. I think maybe they might be waiting to peak for Carrafin, which would be an incredible final. And I'm saying that's going to be the final, but look, I might be proved wrong yet. Right, well, listen, that's all we have time for this week. Thanks to everyone for putting the show together, and we will be back next week. We'll have a Leinster final to review, and I'm sure we'll have loads of other good stuff for you as well. See you next week. Good luck.
Finished yet? It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is sponsored by AIB, proudly backing club and county.